We're actually very impressed that you're here after 5 hours on the floor yesterday with one bill.
Yeah, we really, the whole purpose of that was to be.
This is March 5th already. It's a public hearing for Senate Bill 5524, the Board of Nursing. LFO, can you give us a rundown here?
Certainly, Chair Bates, members of the subcommittee. Today's public hearing is for Senate Bill 5524, which is the Board of Nursing's budget bill. The Board of Nursing is going to give a presentation, followed by the representative from the CFO's office. Cover the governor's budget just a little bit. But just as an overview, the budget proposal this year basically is the agency's current service level budget. With one addition, the agency is seeking to expend funds to update some servers for their operations. There's two other issues with the board this year. They've got they just completed a permanent finance plan, which was basically a reclassification of a bunch of their employees within their existing budget capacity. It's a nominal impact of the 13-15 budget, but there'll be it's anticipated there'll be a reduction in the 15-17 budget due to that. And then there's two fee issues. Senate Bill 136 from the 2013 regular session, I believe, required the board to license to provide a prescriptive authority licensure to a certified nurse anesthetists. And that has been completed, and the board will be bringing forth a fee ratification bill for that. And so we should see that before the work session on the bill.
All right. You want to step up and introduce yourself to the committee, and we look forward to your presentation.
Co-Chair Bates and Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ruby Jason, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon State Board of Nursing. The goal of the Oregon State Board of Nursing is public safety. This is accomplished by the regulation of the practice of nursing. The agency budget will fund the programs required to assure the programs that license, investigate, and provide guidance for nursing practice are maintained. The OSBN has been in existence since 1911 with the same fundamental mission of public protection. The mission statement is to safeguard the public's health and well-being by providing guidance for and regulation of entry into the profession, nursing education, and continued safe practice. Goals are developed through the strategic planning process. Oops. All right, there you go. As of February 25th, 2015, there were 76,610 individuals licensed or certified by the board. All advanced practice registered nurses must also have an RN license, and all certified medication aides also have a certified nursing assistant certification. Therefore, the total number of licenses and certification issued is greater than the individuals served. On this page, you will see that currently the agency manages 81,616 licenses. These are the programs within our agency. By far, our most prominent program is investigations, and we are investigating all complaints regarding violations of the Oregon Nurse Practice Act and assist the board in determining appropriate disciplinary actions. Then we also have our licensing and fiscal department, which, as LFO has stated before, we did some reorg, and I will explain that in a little bit, why we did the reorg the way we did. And then we also have a communications department, which also functions as our information technology, and we have policy analysts that enhance the scope of practice and approve all education programs for nurses, nursing assistants, and medication aides. Some key statistics. As you can see, the number of applicants that we are processing has increased significantly over the years. We are anticipating that this is going to continue. We are seeing many more endorsements coming through to our states, which means nurses coming from other states seeking licensure and work in Oregon. Also, this is also indicative of some of the Affordable Care Act activity, where we are seeing organizations who do managed care in multiple states seeking licensure in Oregon for their nurses, even though those nurses will never be here, but they do care for patients in our state through managed care contracts. And these are our renewals. So continue nurses, these are individuals who want to renew their license, so this is an indication of the continued workforce in Oregon. What you see here is the number of complaints that we have received has declined. We are not sure why. Apparently throughout the years it waxes and wanes. However, our average caseload per investigator is 35, and according to my calculations, the active complaint investigations has stayed steady throughout those years. We currently have 10 investigators in our agency, 6 non-nurse investigators, and 6 nursing investigators, and unfortunately that is due to the increased criminal background check and impairment issues that we are seeing, which we don't feel really need a RN to investigate those particular complaints. These are key drivers. Our revenue drivers this biennium will be the number of individuals obtaining licensure by examination and number of individuals seeking. You can see the increase in the RN LPN licenses. You can see a decrease in the CNA, CMA certificates, and while we do not have any formal studies or trends on why this could be, we do have some anecdotal information from the community saying that, as the Affordable Care Act creates more opportunities in homes and communities, certification for these positions is no longer necessary, and these individuals are seeking work in those venues, and that's why we are seeing some changes. And again, that's anecdotal. We don't have done any trend studies on that. APRN licenses, these are advanced practice registered nurses, which consist of certified nurse midwives, nurse practitioners, certified registered nurse anesthetists, and clinical nurse specialists. And you can see, again, the need in this state for these individuals with this advanced licensure with both prescriptive and dispensing authority has risen, and we continue to see an increase in their numbers in our state, and particularly individuals wanting to work in Oregon, since Oregon has the broadest scope of practice for this particular class of licensing. These are a number of FTEs that we've had.
Question?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is all right if we ask a question as they're going through the
presentation.
The slides aren't numbered, but it would be about 3 or 4 slides before this one. It was on number of complaints investigated.
Yes.
And you added something verbally that isn't on the slide.
Oh,
I'm sorry. To pursue that. No, please don't apologize. Okay. I did want to pursue, though, what you said, because I was interested. Number of complaints, and you said something about RNs.
Yes.
And investigations.
So we have currently in our agency, when I came on board about a year ago, we had an equal number of RN investigators who have an RN license and equal number of investigators who do not have an RN license. And these non-RN investigators usually investigate certified nurse assistants, things that don't require whether or not the nurse used appropriate clinical judgment. Usually for criminal background investigations, DUIs, theft, those types of things, when individuals come on to try to be licensed or they've had an arrest between their renewal cycles, we investigate all of those, and also impairment. So when I came on board, I did an analysis of the types of complaints that we had, because it is very hard for the agency to attract RNs to be investigators. RNs have greater flexibility and higher salaries in non-government service, and so it is hard to attract that. So I really wanted to know, as we had some individuals exiting the agency, whether or not we really needed to have registered nurses as investigators, or could we save the registered nurses for the truly clinical practice error judgment investigations. What I found was that well over 40% of our investigations had to do with criminal background check, abuse in nursing homes, and in impairment. And so I made the decision to transition the investigator cadre from 5 and 5 to 4 nurse investigators and 6, which gave the nurse investigators the much more intricate cases of was there a judgment error in the violation of the Nurse Practice Act. So the non-nurse investigators are actually carrying about 40 cases apiece, whereas the nurse investigators are carrying about 30 cases apiece. So even though the complaints have dropped, the investigations are getting, especially for the nurse investigators, are getting very complex. We are also seeing, and I'm sure as other bills come in front of the legislature this year, that impairment is a huge issue in our state. And we are also seeing an increase in the APRNs, in the types of nurses that can prescribe. We are also seeing prescription abuse by those individuals, either for themselves or for their patients. So while our complaints have dropped, our investigations are becoming more complex and much more criminal activity.
Thank you for providing that additional information. It's troubling information to hear, but I'm also pleased with how you were dealing with the workload and the staffing issue.
Yeah, we feel that about between 35 and 40 cases is a good workload for the group, and as it waxes and wanes, we will determine what our resources need to be. Okay. Right. Any other questions I can answer? So the number of FTEs, as you can see, for the 15-17 year, we have 47 positions, which is a decrease, and I can address that when we look at the org chart. The policy package is for virtual environment server and software upgrade, total $74,095, and this is for virtual server nodes, and I will be... I have to tell you, I really am not sure what all that means. My IT people tell me they need it for additional memory and to make sure that our test environment is appropriate. We have our own software that we've developed, our own database that we've developed in our agency, and we use that for all of our tracking of our licenses, our investigations, everything, and we're running out of memory. And the IT folks tell me we need to upgrade, and that's what this package is for. And it's the only one we are requesting this session. Here is the organizational chart. It is quite different than what you saw in the last legislative session. After about a year and a half search, I was hired back in February of 14. During the first week that I worked there, two managers resigned to accept positions with other agencies, and within a month, two other managers left. One left state service, one went to another agency. This was pretty indicative of the inner turmoil that was happening in the agency. But it gave me an opportunity to really look and assess the agency's infrastructure to determine where we could do any type of reallocation of assets and make sure that we have the right focus. One of the things that immediately came to my focus was that in this agency of 48 staff, there were 7 managers who had direct reports and 3 additional managers with program management responsibility but no direct staff, and I felt that was a little top-heavy. So what I did was I looked at possibly combining departments, and the most glaring example is the licensing fiscal OD department, which you see in the middle there. Licensing brings in 91% of the revenue. Fiscal spends it all, make sure our bills are paid, but there was very little connection between the two. So I decided to move that under one manager and also add organizational development because of the internal turmoil that this agency has gone through, especially since 2007. There was not a lot of attention paid to the development of the staff. So I was able to recruit someone who has organizational development and HR experience and put her into that position. And that eliminated one full-time manager FTEs, which I had asked to be reclassified in this reclassification scheme to put more staff in the front lines, particularly in the licensing department. Since 2007, investigations had a lot of the the attention of the agency. However, only 3% of our nurses end up in investigations, whereas 100% of our nurses have to go through licensing. And I felt that that was the part of the agency that really needed to have some more frontline staff support put in. Also, again, as I said previously, with our criminal background checks becoming more complicated and more intense, we did add half an FTE to assist our background check individual because when I got there, the work she was doing was about 6 months behind. So individuals would get licensed because if they apply for their license prior to it expiring, it is deemed not to have expired, but they still can have a positive criminal background check. So to work through all of that, there was about a six-month delay. So we wanted to make sure that we had individuals who could process that work rapidly in a timely fashion for public protection. I also decided that for me, it would be very easy to forget about the front as you are too enmeshed in being the executive director. So the compliance department, which consists of anyone who's on probation, anyone who is has been deemed to have either impairment and is in the public discipline program, those staff report directly to me. Keeping in mind about what happened in 2007, I wanted to make sure that I had good oversight over that particular group of individuals who monitor these, and so they report directly to me, which again eliminated a management FTE. I did a thorough review of everybody's position description and realized that over the years, since there had not been a thorough review, individuals were working at a class different than their current class, and I reclassified individuals, including our accounting staff, including our compliance specialists, including some of our non-nurse investigators. So we are in line now with what the state says their job classification should be. So all of that, in not knowing a lot about how the state budget process worked, was being done simultaneously and after the picks had frozen back in June. I just kept doing it and have to just say, well, I was new and I thought it needed to get done and I had an opportunity. With four managers leaving, it was the right time to restructure the organization for more of the work and less of the management. And having, you know, been an administrator for the last 25 years, I felt that 47 people really did not need all those managers. So even though we do not qualify under the ratio for the state, since we are less than 100, we now have a one manager for every eight people, and that does that also includes the people who have program authority. So it is still significant, but as looking at those programs, they are so different that they really don't lend themselves to any less of a management structure. So we have worked to improve. We have improved the work environment. We have restructured our labor management committee to be more along the lines of a shared governance model, which is something I am used to in the nursing world. They are working on our personnel policies in our work environment. We have reinstituted monthly staff meetings and have made sure that every employee receives an annual performance appraisal. We've had some individuals, one individual had been there 11 years and only had received three performance appraisals in their entire 11 years there. So we have really tightened up the infrastructure and we will see how it plays out.
Any questions? Just real quickly, how long does it take you to process a license now?
Well, if it is a renewal, it takes us about 3 days because of the criminal background check that we do. We do a state-based criminal background check. We need to make sure that they have their 960 hours of practice in 5 years, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, we are extremely slow in our endorsement process when nurses want to come from other states. We are... The requirements that we are currently bound by really can stretch that out to months. months.
Can we talk about that a little more?
Yeah.
Give us more information.
So the requirement currently says that you must have graduated from an accredited school of nursing. And if you are coming into our state, like, for example, I worked for many years in Texas. I worked in California. And when I came to Oregon, Oregon needed to see my transcript from my original program. And if I had had a name change, they were going to require that name change document to match my transcript. Now, luckily for me, the University of Texas is still in business. However, we've had many nurses where their school nursing program, particularly if they've gone to hospital-based or diploma-based, those programs have closed. So we are very concerned about the length of time this takes. They have to find the original transcript. They can't find the original transcript, get an affidavit that that school existed and what their criteria was. Then if they had a name change, and some people have had several name change, they have to get documentation of all of that. Then if they unfortunately are practicing in California, California is very slow to send verification. California does not subscribe to the electronic database, which allows us to verify that you indeed had licenses. Then we have to have verification from the original state where you were licensed in that you passed the test. So it is extremely cumbersome, and it can take anywhere from a few weeks, if you've got all your paperwork straight, to 2 to 3 months to get an endorsement.
Senator Starner-Haywood.
This is a big problem. And I had heard that it was slow. I hadn't understood why. So what states do this right? Because I don't think it's this bad if you come into this state with, you have to have your original diploma if you come as a physician sometimes, or not even your original diploma now that I think about it, because I didn't have to supply my original diploma. How could we do this better and still protect the safety of the public and ensure that our nurses have proper credentials?
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Steiner-Hayward, I am very concerned about this. This is probably my number one issue. Again, having experienced this process and having been licensed in other states, it is very difficult. We hear it frequently. Right now, it is a matter of rule. I am having my education policy analyst, Joy Ingerson, and the licensing team look at this to see if there's anything we can do. Unfortunately, what we're finding is this is mandated by the statute itself that says that you want to make sure that they are from an accredited school and that their transcripts are valid. Now, if we had electronic transcripts, it wouldn't take that long. The other thing that we do is once all your paperwork is in place, then we do your criminal background check, because if you're not qualified, why do we even do the criminal background check? So that, because it's sent through OPS or Oregon State Police and the FBI, can take anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks, and then we bring it back, and then we look at it. So it is a cumbersome practice. There are remedies out in the country of compact relationships. However, those have not been introduced in this state, and I'm not sure what the support for that would be.
Okay, can I do a quick follow-up? So let me just parse through what you just said.
Uh-huh.
Basically, there are cleaner ways to do this. You have statutory limitations. You need a statutory change. Do you know exactly what you want? And what the Nurses Association and what's good best practice?
I have not talked to the Nursing Association about this particular item. We have had conversations about whether or not Oregon should consider joining the Nursing Compact. Montana just passed it. There are 25 states, which basically says if you can practice in Arizona, then you're okay to practice in Oregon. I believe what we need to do is we need to look at the nursing practice itself. If an individual has a nursing license for, let's just say, 10 years in other states, and they come to our state, and we go to that, we have all the nursing boards belong to the nurses database, and if there's no discipline in any other states and they're practicing well, and why can't we just endorse them and say, okay, here you go? But that's not what the statute allows me to do at this
okay.
time.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
May I?
It's okay.
I think what we're asking for here is for you to bring to us what you think would work statutorily as a change to resolve this issue.
Would be happy to do that.
And that's all we need. And I don't know why we worry about, you know, nurses being able, nurse practitioners doing vasectomies when you got this kind of a problem on your hands. You're a bigger fish here to fry.
Yes.
So please bring that to us. And Senator Steiner Haywood is obviously very interested. I am. That's why I asked the question. And we have questions over here that want to be asked. And I got hunched in the same area.
Right.
So talk to the Nurse Association, put something together.
We will do that.
It's
Thank
something
you.
We probably could do in this session if it's something you can agree on. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to take a little bit different tack. I'm a little skeptical that a suggestion for a statutory change should come to this committee. I'm hoping that a policy committee would receive it and review it.
Well, I said to us,
she's on
the target muscle. Just the legislature.
No, that's just
Thank
the
you.
Legislature.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we.
Go ahead. You first, then you, then you. And there's somebody down here. So, okay.
As you were describing the process to us, I was wondering, how does this process compare to the process for physicians? So that's the first thing. Is it easier or harder, the process that's followed
I'll answer that for
through
you.
Another
it's easier.
Agency?
I'll answer. No, it's not. I would disagree.
Okay.
Because if I had to bring some physicians in lately, we are one of the hardest states in the United States to get somebody a license in. And in fact, we have physicians who won't come here because it's already licensed. Okay. And when you're in the military, you have to be licensed in a specific state. And they tell military people, any state but Oregon, don't go to Oregon or you'll never get it done. It'll take forever. So we got a problem there, too.
Yeah. I'm interested in the possibility of what some other areas we call reciprocity. If something happens here, then we acknowledge it's okay there. So I would be interested for us or a policy committee to hear what might be possible, whether it's signing compacts or some other sorts of agreements. The other thing I'm wondering about is you mentioned that the criminal background check takes 3 to 4 weeks to be completed by either Oregon State Police or the FBI. Is the experience in other programs the same, 3 to 4 weeks for the same process? And the reason I'm asking is I would just like to know, what is the time period required for other programs besides yours?
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, the reason our process takes so long is because as a state we have not yet implemented electronic fingerprint checks, so we still use cards. So if I'm trying to get endorsement in the state of Oregon, I get an application. We get the application, we put in fingerprint cards, we send you the application with the fingerprint cards and say go to some place and get yourself fingerprinted. We do that, and then they send it back to us. We send a card to OSP, they send it based on their batching process, they send it to the FBI based on their process. They then run the fingerprints, and if they can't read the fingerprints, then they tell OSP, OSP tells us, we send another set of fingerprints. So once we are very close, from what my staff tell me, to electronic fingerprinting through field print, which I believe was a legislative last legislative session that was passed, and that could lessen the time because it will go directly from field print, a good print, digitally to OSP. OSP will still send it to the FBI. I also understand that there may be a wrap-back type process where they can keep the fingerprints, because currently they destroy the fingerprints. So if there are ever any more fingerprints or any more background checks needed by boards, they have to get new fingerprints. So that process should change some of it. It still is nurses my age who went to diploma schools, those schools have, again, folded, and it takes a long time to get all of those credentials. And if you've been a nurse for 30 years, it is very hard. People have said the same thing about nursing that they've said about medicine. Individuals who come out of our VA system, because our VA system, you don't need an Oregon license to work. In another, the VA system says, okay, I'd love to work in Oregon, but I'm going to have to start a long time to get my license before that. There is a nursing compact. It currently, again, has 25 states. I will have to have discussions with the Nursing Association about that. To go on record, they have always not felt that the compact was in the best interest of the public. So we'll have to have that discussion. But there are currently, including Idaho, Washington is moving towards joining the compact for that particular reason, is it eliminates redundancy. We are still authorized under the compact to discipline nurses who have issues in Oregon and just take away their right to work in Oregon or sanction their right to work in Oregon. But they could still work in other states, which, in my mind, is fine.
Okay, I've lost track of who's on the queue here next.
Well, can I just? I would like to close that by saying thank you very much for explaining the process to the committee. If you look back at the series of bills that was passed to try to straighten out our criminal background check process,
right.
You'll find some familiar names. on those bills. And I'm glad that you also explained to the committee that we are in the process of implementing the electronic fingerprint check.
I think things. Yeah, Representative
quickly.
Nathanson, I think the issue that was the holdup, everybody wanted it. However, the way it was written, there were some issues with whether or not we could accept out-of-state electronic fingerprints, and that has been resolved thanks to the work
terrific.
Of a lot of hard work with people.
Yeah, Department
getting
of Administrative
that.
Services yeah. has been trying to help students.
I just have a quick question. I just have a quick question to ask. If you were to pick a state that had the best system and had, without having a lot of complaints and issues as far as, and are really up to best practice and doesn't take them as much time as it's taking us to get a conference, what state would it be? I don't think it's ours.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Winters. It's the compact, quite frankly, and it's Texas. Sorry, Texas.
And follow up. If I look at Texas, Texas has led the charge not only in this area for nurses, but also with docs. I went there a few years ago and had some meetings with their senators there, from everything from lifting what we know, tort mm-hmm. reform and some of those other mm-hmm. issues. So they're not struggling with the issues that we're struggling here in Oregon yeah. about having adequate staff that are trained and perform best practices. And so I just had to say that, docs, because we're sitting here and we can take some cues from other states that have already plowed this ground and what they're doing in order to make life better for their citizens as far as the medical services and that provision is concerned. I'm sorry, I'm going to need to leave, but I just need to put that on the record because I figured you were going to take, say, Texas.
Texas. Was there another question down here? Senator Steiner Hayward, I think you had not had a chance to finish here.
No, I think everything I want to say has been said. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'm good.
I'm not going to ask you about central credentialing and electronic credentialing because you probably know we're doing that too. I don't want to take time up for that. We're going to push it out a bit, but you guys are involved in that process. So.
Okay. Okay. I think we were on revenue. So we have 91% of our revenue comes from licensing fees, and 9% comes from DHS for managing the federally mandated certified nursing assistant in the nursing home program. So that's where a lot of our money comes from. Our expenditures, you can see, in particular, the HPSP program, the Alternative to Discipline program for our impaired nurses, is currently 11% of our budget. As of February 28th, there were 99 individuals in that particular program. Let's see here. There were 99 individuals in that program. The line item budget for this program is, as you can see, $1.6 million, which translates to $15,078 per licensee in the program, or that will wax and wane as individuals enter and exit the program. The HPSP program had just completed its fourth year, and the report received from the vendor There, at the end of their year two, there were 182 OSBN licensees in the program. At the end of year three, there were 149. At the end of year four, there were 122. And as we sit about 8 months after the end of that fiscal year, there are now 99. And it should be noted that the HPSP program is available only to RN and LPN staff and not available to the 19,000 certified nursing assistants. Due to the current funding formula, the cost of the OSBN would be prohibitive if these 19,000 certificate holders were included in the alternative to discipline program. Therefore, if these individuals are impaired, they go into the discipline program, and that impairment and that discipline will stay on them for the life of their certification, which with this particular group of individuals is very detrimental to their ability to get work. The cost to the individual licensee to enter this program is significant, and the costs are out of reach of most of our certified nursing assistants. So even though the Board of Nursing pays $1.6 million to the HPSP program, it is still quite expensive for our licensees to be in the alternative to discipline program. Several of them have dropped out and have asked for the board to consider public discipline because they simply can't afford the program.
So, want to ask any questions? Because I do. This was a program that was put together by the legislature, if I remember correctly, 4 or 5 years ago. Several of us were very concerned. It was one that physicians had used, but frankly, they can afford to. It used to have a different program, and I can't remember the name of it. It seemed to be working all right, but there was some push to put everybody into the same program. Do you have an alternative to this that would be as effective, less costly, and could include everyone your board supervises?
We are not allowed under that same legislature to have an alternative to discipline program in our nursing board. We can only do public discipline programs. It is essentially the same process where your practice is monitored by your employer. You have a compliance monitor. You end up being subject to random urinalysis. Non-compliance puts you in front of the board, et cetera. The differences in the program is I think the program was also intended for individuals to enter the program anonymous to the board. However, when you're looking at an individual who has who enters the program on their own, not being board referred, it's $1,500 up front to do a fitness for duty evaluation. It's $300 up front to do a evaluation for your impairment. And then the testing anywhere, they do three random urinalysis a month for the first year, and they can run anywhere from $75 to $125 each. Whereas compared to what the board does is, of course, the board, through their investigation, determines that they are either fit to practice or not. The board decides whether or not they go on probation. We run their background checks, and because we have a state contract through the procurement division of DAS, we have a better pricing on our urinalysis. We also allow the treatment programs to do random urinalysis if they are of the same panel that we currently run. So there are only 9 nurses in this state who have taken advantage of the self-referral anonymous to the board, and the board has referred several individuals, or many individuals, and again only 99 currently are left because of either the expense or the fact that because this particular third-party vendor who runs the HPSP program is not allowed to do any treatment or lab. They are just monitoring, and technically that's what they're doing. They're monitoring versus our compliance individuals to make sure they stay compliant with a board order. So the only way statutorily right now we could get away from the HPSP program is to put everyone in public discipline, which may not, some of those impairment issues may not warrant public discipline because you might have one DUI with a reckless driving charge, and do you really want that on your certificate that you've been publicly disciplined? Versus the alternative to discipline, if the board refers you to the alternative discipline program and you do it well and you do it for the entire time, once you're done with that program, it never appears on your license.
Mm-hmm. I knew this was going to be a problem.
I know. Many of us were concerned when this was put in place. Again, it's a question for a policy committee. I would strongly suggest you take it to a policy committee and have a good discussion and review of that and see if this is really where we need this to be.
The other situation is that there are only four boards that participate in the HPSP. And when I came on board, having been out in the community, I thought HPSP was mandatory for all health regulatory boards. But then I found out that the smaller ones, because of the cost, needed to opt out. And so, and the nursing being by far the largest healthcare regulatory board, we pay the bulk of the cost of this.
So I'm saying take it to a policy committee. I think you got a problem. It needs to be fixed. And not only take it there, but take it with another plan, something you think will work better, will work better for nurses. I mean, there are a small percentage, 2 or 3% of nurses, in, like any large group, that are always chronically in trouble. And there's and then there's another group of people, as you probably know, that have one episode. They get a Dewey or they get something else. We don't need to crucify them in public to keep them working as a nurse. You know, we all make mistakes at the time. It's a one-off. We don't need to make them being worked with, and we need a program to take care of that. And something for those who have a chronic problem, that's different. Please bring something to a policy committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, if there's somebody else ahead of me.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. And I would just say, please get together with your colleagues from the other boards that use this program and maybe even the smaller ones, because if we can come up with a joint solution, it's going to be at least as effective and better cost that the smaller boards can participate so everybody's involved. We get that economy of scale, and because I know the medical board has this concern as well. I don't know which of the two boards are that use it, but regardless, if you could get together with your colleagues at those other boards and engage them in this process, I think it would be great if we came up with a mutual solution rather than just a one-off.
Yeah, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, for your information of the committee, the other boards are the Board of Dentistry and the Board of Pharmacy.
Thank you.
Kind of slowing you down here. Keep rolling.
All right.
We want to get through you today, get public testimony.
Okay. So this slide represents the percentage change from 13-15 to 15-17, and most of that is, again, just inflation. Our key performance measures, our KPMs, you can see that most of them are green, except for line 4 and line 5. Online transactions and timely licensing. During that year, we transitioned to our new homegrown database, and that has, like any other database, is painful transition, but we are seeing our service levels rise as our database stabilizes. And I think that's it. Is that it? That's it?
I knew you were that close. I wouldn't have slowed you down.
Oh, well, I could talk more.
I bet you could.
I have a whole strategic plan I can show you.
Well, first off, I'll tell you that I've stopped having complaints about the Board of Nursing about 2 or 3 years ago, so something hopefully changed, or they just gave up calling me. Secondly, I think you mentioned that in 15-17, you're probably going to see actual reduction in costs because of your reorganization. If you can pull that off with better outcomes, obviously there's no problem from our point of view. Do there are questions here?
I'm just curious, thank you, Mr. Chair, about the drop in online transactions. Is there any reason for that?
Senator Bates, Representative Nathanson, and Representative Kenny Geyer, are you talking about the KPMs?
Well, just the number 4.
Oh, percent of because it was harder to get access to those online transactions because of the instability of our database. It is a homegrown database. It's a Microsoft CRM product, which is actually a sales product, but it is very customizable. And for those of you who've ever instituted anything that was customizable, it comes with some downstream effects. So our licensees found it more difficult to transact online, but we can surely update that slide to see where we currently are if that is the wish of the committee.
So follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that related to the policy option package then, where you're looking for?
No, it is not. That's just about more memory. And ability, well, it is somewhat related, because one of the things that I really have stressed to my informatics team is the testing mm-hmm. of any changes to our database, because it is so homegrown and it's been tweaked and retweaked, that if you change something over here, you're not really sure about what happens over here, mm-hmm. Particularly the portal that the applicants are using. So we are insisting that any change gets tested, and that takes up additional memory. So the actual process of stabilizing the database, no, is not related, but our ability to test our scenarios before we implement them for our users, that is related to that package.
So I've got one last question for, well, two, I suppose. Number one, what's the workforce look like? How are we doing as far as the number of nurses we need, and how are we fulfilling that need? Do you have any sense of that at all?
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, I believe that depends on when my generation decides to retire. When we do retire, I believe all of the data shows that we will be in need of more nursing staff. I believe that we are seeing an increase in our proprietary schools of nursing. The question in the, there have been no long-range studies done. The question is going to be, do these proprietary schools who turn out nurses quickly, are they giving us the same quality as the traditional four-year degree type program? And we're not sure of that. We are seeing all the forecasts show that while there will be a glut initially, once the baby boomers retire, there will be some significant decreases, particularly also with nursing expanding, particularly the advanced practice nurses expanding, the need is always going to be significant. And it won't let up for at least another 15 years, according to the National Council on State Boards of Nursing. So we need more nurses, and we need it to be easier for them to get here.
Have you got the message? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you could disaggregate that a little bit, both in terms of current shortages and projected shortages between the advanced practice, RN, LPN, CNA. Anything you can say in general about that?
As Co-Chair Bates and Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Kenny Geyer, I believe that for the advanced practice nurses, we also have some strict criteria for them to be able to get in into our state. We have a shortage of those. Particularly in our rural areas, there's always going to be a need for that particular type of worker. Now, also, your large pharmacy chains are putting more, and for example, Safeway, they're putting clinics in their stores as a convenience to the public, and those are being staffed by nurse practitioners. So the need is rising as the consumer demand for healthcare changes, particularly in primary care. We are seeing currently in Oregon, there really is not a shortage of nurses at this present time, and that go back to my last comments about the economic downturn several years ago stopped a lot of us from retiring when ordinarily they would have retired. So once the economic recovery is more entrenched, I think you'll see a lot more of the baby boomers retire, and then we could see a shortage of nurses.
At every level?
At the RN level. Mm-hmm. The LPN level is making a resurgence, particularly in the rural areas. It is easier for individuals to get an LPN license. It is, again, not as complete as an RN license, but functional. The tasks that they can do are comparable. So I think the LPN, we're seeing a little bit of increase in the LPN. We're seeing an increase in the RNs. Again, the CNAs, they are finding work elsewhere. The work that these individuals do in terms of long-term care facilities is quite difficult. When we do see staffing issues, they usually are in our long-term care facilities. The quandary for them is more staff equals more money equals greater cost, that people can't afford to pay that cost for long-term care. But we are seeing that drop, and again, while we have not done any studies, they are finding work elsewhere. They are finding work in areas that they can do the same tasks, but they don't need their certificate because there's not an RN present. And an RN is required for someone to maintain their certified nursing assistant license or certification, there has to be a nurse. And in a lot of these environments, in these home care environments, there aren't any nurses, so they don't need their certificate. So you're going to see, the state is going to see an increased amount of community care workers who are not certified by the board, but they're out there working. And that is not to say they are not safe. They are just not being regulated by this board of nursing, where in the past this particular type of worker would have been.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the shortages a few years ago was the instructors, nursing instructors. And that was at the time told to us because they're paid less than most RNs. And that was a problem then. I don't know how that's looking now.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Boone, that is still a huge, huge issue. Since we are charged with accrediting the school's education programs of nursing, we see a stream of notifications from schools saying that their instructors have stepped down. Just to give you an example, my previous job was as the director of nursing at Dornbecker Children's Hospital, and before I took this position, I did look into academia because I would like to teach, and it was $100,000 a year less than what I was making at Dornbecker. And that is a huge issue when you have this much experience and you would like to, but you just can't. And it is, again, with the university system, the whole issue of publish or perish still is very much alive in that system. I know my physician colleagues are experiencing the same thing. They work in academic medical centers to teach and to raise the next generation, but they're being required to do a lot more non-teaching because of the hours that are required for the residency programs, et cetera. So I think the whole issue of the individuals that are qualified to educate our future healthcare workers is a significant issue. A lot of it is about money. A lot of it is about, does the current university system, is it still appropriate for what we're trying to do in educating healthcare workers?
Thank you for your comments. That's a very big topic. Again, it's primarily one for a policy committee, but it's an interesting topic, and I give my views on it too, but we'd waste your time. We have one more report here today.
Good morning, Co-Chair Banks, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office, and so I'll give a brief presentation on the governor's budget for the Board of Nursing. So the Board of Nursing is situated in the public safety outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. It contributes to this outcome area by providing consumer protections and by ensuring patients receive quality healthcare services by setting high standards for licensure. So here you can see the brief history of the board's expenditures and FTE over time. You can see there's an increase from 2011-13 to 2013-15. So this is in part due to savings from the executive director position that was open for about 9 months in the biennium.
Mr. Chair, really quick question. I feel very silly as a member of this committee asking this. What does LAB stand for?
Legislatively approved budget.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. So other increases from 11-13 to 13-15 include some position adjustments and reclassifications between those two biennia. In total, the 2015-17 governor's budget for the Board of Nursing is $14.8 million other funds. This is a 2.6% increase from the 13-15 legislatively approved budget. This will leave the board with approximately $4.1 million in ending cash balance, and this is equivalent to about 6 months of operating expenses. So the 2015-17 governor's budget supports current service current services, and then invests $74,000 in the board's information technology systems. I won't misspeak on what those changes are. I'm also not a technology person, but my understanding is that I'll help their system avoid downtime and then also help the board manage its servers and do that testing that the director just spoke about. There are a couple of outstanding issues that need to be incorporated into the 2015-17 budget for the board. The first is the need to ratify fees, an increase in delinquent renewal fees, and then the establishment of fees for prescriptive privileges for certified registered nurse anesthetists. This was the board was directed to create these fees in Senate Bill 136 that was passed in the 2013 legislative session. The second issue is incorporating those personnel adjustments that Ruby Jason just described. I think she did a good job of going over the timing for why that permanent finance plan is coming forward now. My office received that plan in October. The governor's budget is due December 1st, and in October, to make sure that we're consistent in how we build the governor's budget, we don't process permanent finance plans at that time. So that was put on hold until after the governor's budget was built, but we will be working with LFO staff to make those expenditure adjustments for the 2015-17 budget. And that is everything I have for you, and I'd welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you for your presentation. Questions? Thank you. Mrs. Jason, I'd like to have you take over a couple of other agencies we're having some difficulty with. If we get them to 2.3%, we'd be fine. Okay. But I don't think you're probably willing to make those changes. If there's nothing else the committee has to ask this group, we can close down today and call it a good day and be back here on Tuesday. We're not having any meeting on Monday morning. So I'll be all aware of that. I don't want anybody showing up. Where'd everybody go?
I would, too.
And Representative Olson, I'll call you personally twice this weekend to remind you. So.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Doctor.
Oh, you're welcome. So we are adjourned. Thank you.
I feel a lot better about myself.